You have the pointer?
You have it for you, yes.
And the microphone?
All right. It's usually 15 minutes presentation.
There's a microphone in here, no?
You can use it. 15 minutes presentation.
All right. Okay. Yes, my name is Thomas Provencelik. I'm an American living in Hong Kong, and the title of this talk is Nanotechnology and the Disinfection of Drinking Water. Introduction. WHO UNICEF estimates 1 billion people worldwide, now this is worldwide, do not have access to safe drinking water. And here you see various bacteria. Here's E. coli. We have this in the U.S. Salmonella as well. Schistosoma. Cholera here in Hong Kong. And hepatitis A here in Sri Lanka. Now in Sri Lanka, 10% of the population do not have safe water. It cannot depend on pumping water through porous carbon because that's just not practical. And there's a special bacteria here called leptospirosis. This is what I've been told. It will damage the kidneys and liver. It gets into the water from rodents that urinate in the water, then people drink the water and they can get this bacteria. Here's an example of this. This is leptospirosis. You can see it on the arm. And it's about a 1.5 micron long molecule and nanoscale dimensions across the diameter. And this is an SEM of the leptospirobacteria in the kidney tissue. Okay. Now, bottled water, if you had that everywhere in Sri Lanka, again, I'm talking about Sri Lanka, if it's available, it's usually too costly for the 10%. And boiling water is not convenient. They could build a fire and boil water. Like in China, electricity to boil water is just about everywhere. It's hardly a problem. You can boil, and in China, it's basically almost a tradition to boil water. Even if they had boiled water, they'd still boil it. So what can you do here? What can you do? Proposal: QED-induced EM radiation from body heat in a handheld, for example, this handheld aluminum bowl, nano-coated aluminum bowl, provides the UVC now, to inexpensively disinfect water without electricity. Remember, I'm talking about the developed world. They do not have pumps to go through filters. So what can you do there? And I'm arguing they have body heat anywhere, so basically if I can, that's the idea. And here you see the UVC coming out into water held in a bowl like this, and the hand is producing the UVC. It goes into the water and takes care of the bacteria. QED here is quantum electrodynamics, a la Feynman. EM is electromagnetic. The UVC is UV at 254 nanometers. Operating principle: QED converts the body heat from the hand holding the bowl to UVC radiation because the temperature of the nano coating cannot increase by quantum mechanics. QM's quantum mechanics. And I'm going to try to show you that. Nano coating. Applying a nanocoating to a surface, it avoids natural convection and conserves body heat by the emission of QED radiation instead of the usual increase in temperature. in heat transfer, we all know there are three modes: conduction, radiation, and convection. But I'm going to propose that maybe there's a fourth mode, and I call it QED. This might be the fourth mode of heat transfer. Here you see a substrate of any sort, body heat. It could be heat from an electrical heater, it doesn't matter. Any type of form of heat. Doesn't have to be a laser. You put a macro coating on that substrate, you're going to find the temperature goes up and you get natural convection. We all know this. Went too fast here. Okay, if you put a nano coating on, less than 100 nanometers, and do the same experiment, what you're going to find, there's no temperature increase, and then radiation will come off the surface. It's high frequency radiation, so it passes through the convective barrier off into the continuum. Very efficient. So the nanocoating conserves the body heat without a temperature increase because it passes through the natural convection barrier. The background zinc oxide coatings on aluminum improved the boiling heat transfer coefficient 4 to 10 times. This work was done at Oregon State University about 5 years ago. BHT here is boiling heat transfer, and recently in Korea, they put graphene on silicon dioxide and they improved the boiling heat transfer coefficient about 2 times. This is last year. Theory: heat capacity atom, conservation of energy, electromagnetic confinement. And on the heat capacity atom, show here the Planck energy here on the ordinate here in electron volts. On the abscissa is the thermal wavelength, and on the right you see the kT energy of the atom at room temperature, 0.258 eV. Now, this horizontal line going all the way across is classical physics, molecular dynamics, COMSO, and all those programs. The atom is always assumed to have kT energy, always, from the macroscale way out here to the nanoscale over here. This is the Planck law, and if you compute this out at 300 degrees Kelvin, you get this yellow curve, and you can see down to about here, you could argue, well, quantum mechanics and classical physics give about the same heat capacity, but this is out maybe 30, 40 microns. And this equation, as you know, was developed about a century ago by Planck. And if you look here, you see lambda kT. This T is temperature. And at that time, they had a lot of trouble with it. Einstein realized that as the temperature goes to zero, this exponent goes to infinity. There's no energy to the atom. However, at that time, they were not concerned about lambda. Now, you can have finite T, but lambda has to be very small, right, for the same argument to apply. And the only way you can do that, and I'm going to try to show you, is in nanotechnology. You can't do it in the macroscopic world. Okay, so the bottom line here is in nanocoating, the atom has no heat capacity by quantum mechanics. Conservation of energy, okay, how do you conserve it? The proposal is that the absorbed energy is conserved by creating QED radiation inside the nanocoating, and this occurs by frequency up conversion to the electromagnetic resonance. This follows from Feynman. Electromagnetic confinement. Nanostructures have high surface to volume ratio, you all know this. And the absorbed energy, therefore, any energy you put into those, the nanostructure, has to be confined to the surface. It actually traps itself to the surface. There's no physical confinement here. There's no helmet around each atom. This is a salt-trapping mechanism. And in QED, we'll convert that trapped energy to standing waves between the surfaces, as example in all that nanocoating. Here is a nanocoating, a body, nanocoating surrounding. Heat comes in. There's no temperature increase, again by quantum mechanics. Alright? So the only way it can conserve that is put the energy into the surfaces. Two surfaces, there's your energy. And then QED comes in a la Feynman, and you convert that energy into a standing wave. The half wavelength, as you can see here, lambda over 2 is equal to the thickness d. And then the radiation comes off. Now, the radiation that comes off can go back into the body, excuse me on that, but it isn't lost, it's converted to heat. That heat in turn comes back out. So the effective efficiency here is close to 100%. And LEDs can't do that at all, not in the UVC. Equations are simple. Frequency of the radiations, velocity of light C divided by refractive index N divided by the wavelength. Again, lambda over 2 is D. And the Planck energy of that radiation is Planck's constant times the frequency F. Application analysis, coating, selection, body heat, and disinfection dosage. Here you see the radiation produced. This is in microns. The energy is in EUV, extreme ultraviolet UV, VIS, and IR. This is in microns, not nanometers. And the coating thickness is in nanometers. And you can see, to get UVC, I need around 0.254 microns. And you can see you need a material with a refractive index close to 2, around 50 microns thick. So if you can put this on a surface, you can produce the UVC to do all your disinfection. Coating selection, zinc oxide, I'm not going to spend time on this. It's a question of zinc toxicity, and that's still around. But the latest on that I have is it actually will leach into water, but it's really not toxic. Not. That's tongue-in-cheek. But I think zinc oxide is the optimum bulk coating material. Response time, you can go through some arguments here and show that you're talking 20 to 60 milliseconds, and on a 1 second time scale, which you'll see when I come to the rest of the talk, it's pretty fast. And the body heat, the upper bound, 37C and ambient at 20, it gives you a delta T of 17. But if you go through the numbers, what you find is you only need delta T's of 304 and 202 degrees C to produce the 6 milliwatts per square centimeter. 6 milliwatts per square centimeter is the heat I have in my hand. So body heat greater than 6 milliwatts per centimeter probably exists. Disinfection dosage. The guidelines are for water. Most of the pathogens can be eliminated from 16 to 38 millijoules per square centimeter. Body heat of 6 milliwatts per centimeter squared, I think you can see. Q times T, which would be 6 milliwatts per square centimeter times 7 seconds, gives you around 42. And only need 38. But I'm recommending around 10 seconds. You hold the water in the bowl 10 seconds before you drink it. Okay. Now here's a list of UV dosage required for 99% destruction of organism. And the units here are microwatts seconds per centimeter squared. Well, a microwatt second is a microjoule, and the numbers I've been throwing around are millijoules. So So you have to divide these numbers by 1,000 to get something comparable to what I'm talking about. So a disinfection of water path for 10 seconds, you get 60 millijoules per square centimeter. It will disinfect all the bacteria you use and most of the spores and viruses. Now there's the special problem you have in Sri Lanka is the Leptospira. And I've also, from an earlier talk, there were a talk on endocrine disruptors, oral talk three, and actually I don't have that data, but leptospirosis is shown here, as you can see in red. It's going to be around 6 millijoules per centimeter squared, which is more than the 60 millijoules per square centimeter is far more than enough to do that. And by the way, where I started off with this was with Ebola, and Ebola is no different to Leptospira. Ebola is very easy to kill. Of course, you don't put water in the bowl, you just go over the surface. Okay. And the results, tests are ongoing. I can't report on them. There's reasons for that. And collaboration, the other reason for coming to Sri Lanka is to look. I think you can see, if I can prove this experimentally with a lot of data, I think you can see this is very big. And I can't do it. I'm too small of a person. So what I'm looking for is collaboration or funding, it doesn't matter, and with interested parties. And then you can go to my home page here. There'll be a lot of data on a lot of analysis, a lot of applications of QED radiation there for you to look at to convince you that there is a fourth mode of heat transfer. Well, that's all I have. I thank you very much.
Extremely good, and it's open for discussion now. Genius technique. Let me start. Now, this you have IR radiation, isn't it?
I have what?
IR radiation, infrared. Body heat means infrared. And do you convert infrared into UV?
Infrared?
Yeah.
What do I want infrared for?
Body generates infrared radiation. Body heat means infrared, isn't it?
The heat is from the hand. The body produces 100 watts of average humans produce about 100 watts of energy.
Of heat?
100 watts of energy. And their typical average area for an adult man or woman is 1.75 square meters. So the ratio of those two comes up with a Q of 6 milliwatts per square centimeter.
So what is the mechanism of upconversion? That means this low frequency radiation is converted to high frequency one. What is the mechanism there?
What is the mechanism
of,
why this?
Of upconversion.
Of upconversion,
yeah.
Well, the way Feynman put it back in the 60s, QED can be explained by a quantum mechanical box. If you put energy into a quantum mechanical box with sides, lambda over 2, you're going to produce radiation of wavelength lambda.
Lambda, yes.
That's basically the idea.
Wavelength is increased, lambda over 2 goes to lambda, yeah?
Yeah, it's a half. Yeah, it's a half wavelength. The sides of the box are the half wavelength.
Yeah,
so
right.
It produces radiation of wavelength lambda, and half of that is lambda over 2, which is the side of the box.
Oh.
So this is a QED effect.
Yeah.
No temperature. And again, I coming here, I ran into a few people. But if you want to be, if I could say something briefly that would convince you that quantum mechanics is very powerful at the nanoscale. If you take a nanoparticle in your finger, hold it, and you put it into an aluminum molten liquid, aluminum.
Yeah.
This has been done at Naval Research.
Yeah.
You drop it in there, you let it cool down, okay? And what you find, SEM shows the nanoparticles throughout. That is, the nanoparticles does not vaporize. If you put porous carbon, large particles, they can't find anything. Because the porous carbon acquires a very hot temperature and simply vaporizes. So it'll continue to vaporize down to nothing. So they find nothing. They were trying to argue that you can produce very, very strong material like aluminum without ever seeing the nanoparticles. Well, I don't think that's possible. And the explanation is quantum mechanics. That should convince all of you that if you have any doubts, it should convince those people that quantum mechanics is really applicable at the nanoscale. That's basically the message. I gave a talk the other day on molecular dynamics, and it applies there as well. But again, everyone's assuming that the atom has heat capacity when they do MD simulations of discrete molecules, which unfortunately is not correct.
And if you are looking for collaboration, of course, University of Peradeniya, we have biologists and chemists.
Yeah, what?
University of Peradeniya, that is where I come from in Sri Lanka, for collaborations.
I've already talked to a few people. Yeah. I would like to, since I presented most, I would like to put a coating of Teflon on here.
Yeah, sure.
It doesn't have to be nano. See, there's problems making the nano. But a Teflon with 50 nanometer nano type zinc oxide nanoparticles distributed through it, that would, I think, be a lot easier way, and you wouldn't have to worry about people scratching it, because the 50 nanometers is difficult to control in West Africa, let's say. Yeah, I think
we will have it.
The word is out, so I let it go, you know. Professor De Silva, I already approached him, and but let it go. It'll come out if it has to. And on your talk, there was a woman in Nigeria who wanted to put nanoparticles in filters for application in West Africa, and I had a problem with that all right away because there's no electricity there. You got to pump that. And the problem you have, even if you can walk by that, the problem you have is the nanoparticles. If they come off, okay, if they come off and float, you get into the water and you drink that, you may be worse off.
Yeah.
That would have been my comment on your talk. Yes.
Yeah, but we just.
Well, you know, we don't want to always say what we feel, right?
Okay, time is a constraint, so.
Yeah, I let you go on.
And this presentation is.
No offense.
That's you.
No offense.
No.
He's from Bombay, and
I'm from Bombay. I brought these from India. And this is just aluminum, 1 millimeter. But you need a coating. You
can if
you can put a 50 nanometer zinc on.
Oh, yeah, but it has not been done
yet. It's
this aluminum.
This is just aluminum.
Going to 7.1 and the change in the risk of biomechanical or now by 2.1 and by biomechanical.